NetCredit is here to say yes to a personal loan or line of credit when other lenders say no. Apply in minutes and get a decision as soon as the same day. If approved, applications are typically funded the next business day or sooner. Loans offered by NetCredit or lending partner banks and serviced by NetCredit. Application subject to review and approval. Learn more at netcredit.com/partner. NetCredit. Credit to the people.
From pit lane to podium, the Las Vegas Grand Prix is providing fans a race day experience at the speed they deserve. With the help of T-Mobile for Business, our 5G advanced network solutions are powering race day operations with event-wide connectivity. From streamlined gate entry to an immersive app, giving fans blazing fast access to the sport they love. This is accelerating innovation. This is the Las Vegas Grand Prix with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
All right, welcome back, everyone. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome back to another epic episode of the Charlie Shrem Show, where twice a week together, we get to dive deep with some of Bitcoin and crypto's most influential leaders to truly understand trailblazers, people that are sitting, working, doing the work, making the relationships, bringing the consumer applications, proving out why crypto actually exists and all this technology, validating it. And in the meantime, we're learning a lot of information along the way, and we're having a lot of fun, and we're telling a lot of stories. And we're on this episode of Decentralized Identity. We've been talking about it through a lot of different topics and a couple of different lenses. I'm excited to welcome back Ingo Rube, the founder and CEO of the Kilt Protocol, Bolt Labs. Thank you so much for coming back on the show.
Thank you for having me again.
Of course, it's really exciting. And Gustav Hemmelmeyer, you're the chief legal officer of Kilt Protocol as well. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
It's going to be a lot of fun. I know you guys are really deep into it, working on a lot of different projects. We've been speaking about it. But Gustav, I'd love to hear a little bit about you and meet you. Tell me, what did you work on before and where do you come from?
I come from Austria and I have been working in tech and startups for probably 10, 15 years before I joined the team. I've been working for SAP, so traditional infrastructure for technologies. And I started working here from the beginning, which is really cool because I get to be part of the process where we were thinking about what kind of things we want to work on, what makes sense in the blockchain ecosystem, what is a good project and not just a quick project. And I had the pleasure to be part of that and think through it from all kinds of angles. So I got to watch how the tech was made and was thought out. I was part of creating a white paper, and I was dealing with all the legal and compliance part of a project, basically making it up as we started because there was much around yet.
Yeah.
There was a bit of stuff from the US you could read, and there was all kinds of lawyers who had their specific fields that were working on, and my job was to think that together for our project in a way that makes it as compliant and as safe as possible, which is really a cool, innovative space.
It's so interesting because when you're going to university and you're growing up and you're studying to be like an attorney or a lawyer, they just kind of tell you, or there's like an assumption that an attorney or a lawyer just kind of like works in an office for a law firm somewhere. And then they tell you like, oh, all you tech and finance people can go and start startups. But they don't tell you that the chief legal officer is one of the most important roles in any tech or startup. And if you're doing medical, crypto, insurance, anything you're doing, like why is that? I'm just curious, you think?
I think it's very traditional to be in a law firm. And I think that's also what's portrayed in pop culture because it's...
Oh, interesting.
It looks exciting to have all kinds of different things coming in all the time. For me, that wasn't an option because I really wanted to dig in what the people that I'm addressing are doing. And the problem is, in a law firm, if you're billing by the hour, people come and they want to be quick and they want to have a quick solution and then they want to leave. And if you stay in a company, you really get to watch the process and you really see what's happening with your advice, and people will come back and say, now we need an additional thing. And they would do it without watching a bill because you're there anyway.
Oh, good point.
You get a lot of feeling for what you do, why you do it. And you also get to be part of the team instead of an outsider, which is also exciting.
Ingo, Gustav mentioned something earlier that I wrote down. He said something that what separates a good project from a quick project. How do you guys how do you evaluate that? How do you know what in any industry, whether something is like a good project or just something? Because a quick project can also be a good one, but you're also wanting to build long-term solutions for a long-term goal. A lot of people don't know how to separate. And it's also easier to start and build a company to solve a very quick problem.
Yeah, I'm not sure if Gustav was just polite when he said quick. actually wanted to say shitcoin or something like that. I think it goes more into that direction. So when we started off, because we have the industry background, we have industry companies which own partially our company here and which are privately owned and stuff. And those people actually don't want to get into the news with Stockpool and stuff like that. And also we try to do something extremely useful. And we have a lot of ideas, which we all actually around identity. I think this is something that everyone needs. And we want to build something which is just not quick. And then 2 years later, we all do something else. When you look at the team we have here, we basically didn't change the team for the last 6 years. It's just a little bit growing from time to time, but people always stay here. So we're not here for the quick money. We are here for building something really useful for the world. And
yeah, you've been around for a long time.
We've been around for 6 years now, yeah.
That's amazing. I want to get right into it. Ingo, we've learned that DIDs and verifiable credentials are and that they what they are. We've been talking about it the last couple episodes, and that they enable self-sovereign identity. We've also seen examples from industry and blockchain where these new standards are already used. But I think maybe this will not lead to mass adoption unless, as we've kind of alluded to a couple of times, the government also adopt these standards. And this is probably exactly what they don't want to do, right?
Yeah, this is what we always thought. So we had exactly the same thinking. So when I was asked in the first couple of years of our company, okay, when will I have my, my driver's license really on a DID or on a verifiable credential? I always said, this is something which is going to come like grassroots movement. So first, scientists, and they make all those fantastic standards, and then there's some crazy people like us implementing it. And then there's some other crazy people using it. And then at one point, industry notices, wow, this is really interesting. And then they adopt it. And then it becomes a de facto standard. And I was always thinking that governments are actually last. Now it seems that governments try to overtake industry a little bit. So we see a lot of initiatives since a year or so from governments recognizing DIDs and verifiable credentials actually as the future of digital identity. And I find this very, very interesting because, as you said, actually, we would have thought that they are not very much interested in that because it's sovereign, it's technology, it's hard to understand. When I talked with the German governments 3 years ago, it was 5 years ago, maybe, it was really, really completely impossible to convey this to them and to actually get them excited about it because they said, oh, this is something very, we lose control, basically, and stuff like that. Now, governmental institutions from all over the world, from Europe, from the US, come and actually start looking at those standards and saying, this is exactly what we want to have, and this is what we want to have implemented. And this is very interesting. It seems that they see the dangers of the centralized identity in the internet right now and look for solutions. And then there are solutions because those standards are already there. So there's nothing that they have to make research for the next 10 years about. Those 10 years have already passed and everything is there. And you can find solutions which are already implemented, like what we do. And so it's now happening in the government, and it's happening much faster than I would ever have thought.
I want to take a step back here because the way we kind of associate our identity right now is through these like plastic identity cards that we have. In some countries, I think Estonia, they have like an e-residency program, and some countries around the world have like gotten better where their institutions are online, you know. But what would change? I mean, look, what type of privacy could we have added, and what other type of things could it attach to related to us about our activity on the internet?
Maybe I start on that. I'm thinking the governments are trying to cut out the middleman, which is private companies that are currently providing identity for online. And by going full in with government identities that are issued directly into a wallet of a user and that have all kinds of privacy preserving features, they are on the one hand cutting out those who are currently massively profiting by tracking people online and by providing their identity in a way, but also being able to delete them anytime or, have all kinds of power about their identity. And cutting them out is a very, very good idea, also from a human rights perspective, because it is kind of awkward that we have these huge companies dealing with identities while the governments are still issuing paper and plastic stuff that we carry in our wallets while 50% of it is online.
So we've been talking about like having these DIDs now. And if we remove these, you're right, we have like Facebook login, Google Authenticator, all different methods of like, you know, going through KYC accreditation. We're constantly uploading our data. We all have copies of our passports or our driver's licenses, pictures of them ready to go in case we need to download a new application. Everyone knows that feeling, but it's kind of stupid. And it's also, we're giving up our data like all the time. Like it's just free. It's all of our information is freely out. Anyone can buy it. It's just so broken. And all the infrastructures, you probably know, it's not out there. So at first, the idea of like single organizations, whether it's the government, at first, the idea is like, if they manage identity all together, and then we use that to interface with everything else, that sounds good because it's easier. But how can we ensure that crypto is used to make sure that all this data is still like kept on the client side and where it's like we're controlling it and it's not like the government can do all the bad stuff that these private companies were doing anyways?
Yeah, this is actually exactly where the standards come in. So when you use the standards, which imply cryptography and good cryptography, then this is basically out. So a government is going to issue you not your DID. Your DID is generated on your own wallet, on your own device. So this is your identifier. This is what you identify with. And what the government adds is a credential. So they basically check you. You have to go somewhere. I don't know what this process is going to be. But they issue, like they issued the plastic card to you, they issue something into your wallet. And then you own this thing, which is in your wallet, like with a plastic card. And you can use it forever, everything that you want to use it. And they definitely do not have a phone home functionality. So this wallet is not going to ask the government again if you can really use your credential. You just use your credential. There's no way that the government notices where you use your credential for. And this is basically very similar to any other credential. And it's also important that not only the government can issue credentials, I can issue credentials to your wallet, and companies can issue credentials to your wallet. And basically anyone can. Maybe the government credential is a little bit more valuable for some things like traveling to another country, but there might be just gaming credentials, there might be social media credentials, and they all go into the same wallet. And the wallet is basically there for you for making sure that the right cryptography is actually applied to whatever you do with it. And this is happening on your own device and not at some government server. The only interaction that you have with the government is basically they issue the credential to you and then you're good to go and they never hear from you again.
That's so cool. Are you guys working with any governments or any agencies on like test piloting this?
We are basically in talks with governments. It's not
far,
yet
slow.
Working. This is all very, very fresh. When I say, since a year, they seem to be interested. This means that they are basically coming out with the calls now so that you can participate. And a lot of, especially in Europe, a lot of paperwork has to be done and stuff like that. So there's no, I don't think that there's actual projects which are already implementing this. this. What for me is the big news, actually, that they say they want to do that. And we see from one government, which is basically your government, that they actually started a call, and they said, this goes very specifically into one direction, which is travel documents. They said very clearly, anyone can apply, but if you don't use DIDs and verifiable credentials, then you don't have to apply. So they rule out every other kind of solution. They say they want exactly that.
Oh, wow.
Fantastic news. So the US basically goes into that direction. And for us, this is like, wow, we have been working 6 years, obviously not in the wrong direction. So this is actually pretty cool. And from Europe, what we see is that they recognize verifiable credentials and that they actually want every member state, of course, to build their own wallet. But they are still not really convinced about the DID stuff, but they are totally convinced about the verifiable credential stuff, which is already very, very good. So because they see that cryptography is necessary, that privacy is necessary, that you have your own wallet is necessary, and stuff like that. So we see that everyone, at least in the Western Hemisphere, is moving into that decentralized direction, which is fantastic news, actually, for anyone who lives in a decentralized world.
It's so cool because verifiable credential is essentially an extension or continuance of like the early NFT technology, or like a non-fungible token, a credential that goes to you, you know, whether it's like a token that can never be moved or traded, but it's like more of a credential and it's issued by an authority. It's like a soul-bound NFT, if you will. It's like attached to you when you're born, as opposed to like something that you're going to receive and then try to trade. And there's like a financial aspect to it. And it's so funny how like, everyone was wondering a couple of years ago when people were making art on the internet with NFTs, like how would this venture into something that governments or people would actually use? And like, here we are today. It's really cool. Gustav, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I don't know. I think soulbound token is a slightly different concept than verifiable credentials. And I've just been on a conference and watched a talk on soulbound token, and I didn't really delve into it enough yet. But I think what they have in common is that they are revocable by their issuer in case something is wrong or in case something expired for some reason. And I'm not the tech guy. Maybe Ingo can add to that. For some reason, we think that verifiable credentials are the better concept because you can use them wider than soulbound tokens. But I'm not sure.
Yeah, the soulbound tokens basically, which is something which comes out of Ethereum. And the Ethereum guys, they were thinking of, actually, we need some kind of credential. Unfortunately, they didn't read the specification about credentials because it's all there, so they could just have implemented it. So they thought of something new. And then, of course, that as a verifiable credentials is like hundreds of scientists working for 7 years. And soulbound token is a bit like two people and a bottle of beer sitting together and making something up. So there's a little bit of a difference in depth, actually. I think the biggest difference between them is that the soulbound token actually starts with a crypto address and verifiable credential does not. That's a huge difference because that means that the soulbound token is only going to be relevant inside the crypto world, which is also a beautiful world, but it is a small world compared to the rest of the world. And the verifiable credential is something that anyone will get. So what my prediction would be that in 2030, or probably a couple of years earlier, we always thought 2030, but now I would almost bet on 2025, 2026, that you have your driver's license and your passport in form of a verifiable credential. And this is not going to be a soulbound token, because that would mean that you link your whole personality against one crypto address, which is not explainable to the majority of the population.
Wow. Thank you. Thanks so much for explaining it, because people have been asking me to explain what's going on there. So you mentioned travel documents, which is really exciting because I love traveling. Speaking of which, did you guys see that Americans will have to file like a similar ESTA that Europeans have to file when they come over to America? And in the next couple of years, it's like, as an American right now, I can go to Europe without filing anything like request. I could just land and go. In a year or two, I'm going to have to file some documents similar as you in Austria. When you come over, you have to file like ESTA or something like that. So I think like we could really see some, be cool to see some Kilt Protocol DIDs integrated there somehow, where it makes the filing of that easier because you already had your government credential established prior.
Yeah, that's one of the ideas, which I don't know if it's going to be first there. So for the US, it seems to be the first piece where they're actually looking into. I'm not sure if this is going to happen in Europe. I think in Europe we have other, at least in Germany, I can say we have extreme challenges around a prescription and stuff like that. So because this is all on paper here.
Interesting.
And this, we actually need a leapfrog effect. So I would assume that prescriptions and stuff like that will go first, and maybe also appointments with doctors, especially when a new pandemia should show up and vaccination is an issue and you have to actually look where you get your vaccination and stuff like that. So these things have proven to be totally unorganized and very, very complicated in many countries in Europe. And other countries were actually pretty good. So when you look, for example, at Italy and Greece, they managed it because they had centralized systems, yeah. But they already had IT. And in Germany, we still had paper. So there needs to be somehow we have to move forward, but we cannot move forward on centralized systems because that's, as Gustav said, that actually, well, from a human rights perspective, not okay if government starts collecting all the information about you. So the centralized systems Well, there were a solution in the concrete case of having a pandemic. They are not a long-term solution. So Europe has to move together, and they have to move together in the right direction. And they recognize that it has to be a decentralized direction.
It's like a chicken and egg problem, because here you have the solution that we have now, which is terrible. But if we like take the prescriptions, that's a perfect example. You have it on paper. And here in the US, we stopped using paper for prescriptions, but it's like this shitty, terrible, centralized, like ad hoc system that's run by the pharmacies themselves. And it like is slow, and there's no receipts, and it never works. And you can't look up your data. I'd rather go back to paper, because then I can maintain copies of all my prescriptions and show it to if I go to a different specialized doctor or whatever. This is the worst. And so it's like, I could totally see how fast scaling is worse than slower scaling, but doing it in a smart way, like you're talking about. So
prescription is based on a verifiable credential, right? Yeah. So it's issued by an authority, which is the doctor, and it's held by a holder, which is the patient, and then it's presented to a verifier, which is the pharmacy. So it's exactly the process that verifiable credential describes.
Thing that's so private that you don't want anyone to collect all the data for you. So it is a human rights issue. It is of interest for the people using the doctor's services that not anyone can just go and look up on a centralized data bank where they went, which doctor, and what kind of medicine they get.
Yeah.
So it needs privacy preserving, like a verifiable credential.
And going back to the travel document thing, a lot of times when you travel, if you travel with prescriptions, you have to provide documentation of your prescriptions. And so I don't want to give, like, what a privacy breach that is, that I have to tell the person who's scanning, you know, my bag at the airport, all of my medical data and go through all my prescriptions and my medical problems while 50,000 people are behind me listening in. Like, what kind of world do we live in that still happens? So could we connect this somehow? Travel documents, prescription, medical data, where it's like you have your DID or your credential, it's proved, and you can just pass through.
Yeah, you would probably have another credential, which basically says this person, which is issued by your doctor again, which says this person needs the following types of medication and can go and travel with that. And that if this credential is then accepted in a worldwide way, then you could just show the credential to someone and then everything would be nice and privacy preserving, because you could show it also to a kiosk system or something all these things are possible because verifiable credentials can be presented as a QR code, right? So that's enough. You don't need to read the information. And also they have something that what we call selective disclosure, which means that you don't have to, there might be some medication that you don't want to take with you when you travel, but you still need it and you have it at your home. So you could say, I don't want this to be shared because I don't take it with me right now. So then you don't share this verifiable credentials. So all these things have been already worked in. And this is maybe where you see how complex the system actually is, and that it's not possible that a couple of crypto guys build Soulbound tokens with the same capacity.
No, you can't do it with the same capacity, because I know I'm reaching here, but you guys saw the earthquake in Morocco the other day, 1,000 people died. Imagine if a natural disaster happened, you allow the government to review your medical data, and then they can send emergency personnel specifically to people that need the specific things. You have hurricanes here in Florida. They shut down the bridges and everything. But if someone has a heart attack who's maybe prone to it, a pacemaker, imagine how more efficient would the government be if we had something like verified credentials? It just blows my mind.
That's actually a really cool idea, that you would just share your credentials as needed with a website that collects the data of the people who are trapped somewhere. And then all the stuff that's needed is just sent through a helicopter or something. And then at least they're all safe for the duration that they can't move out.
And that could actually also be made in a very safe way when you have the right cryptography attached to it. And another thing which actually struck me very much at this call from the US government was that they want something in there which is multi-show unlinkability, which means that if you show your credential once and you show the same credential to another person, that even if those two persons collude, they can never find out that that was the same credential. Oh. And if you see something like that in the government call, you think like, wow, those people have really understood the issues. And this is totally amazing. And all these things are also possible with verifiable credentials, which is fantastic. So that's really cool.
I am just completely blown away by all this. As we're nearing the end of the episode, is there any other thoughts that you guys have or anything you want to add? I love how whenever we talk about these conversations, there's so many like very near-term like use cases and applications. We talked, you know, to a couple of different guests and all have different applications for it. But it's nice to see that there's like, it's actually happening, because here I am sometimes on the other side of crypto land and I'm in crypto land and it's like crypto built for crypto people. And I'm like, when is this going to be built for real normal people and actually provide use cases and applications to save lives? Save lives, guys. This is what it is. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Probably also why it takes so long, because you have to groom people to understand privacy, technology, politics, also existing systems. So if we talk about the health system, for example, that's an old system. We can't reinvent it. That's tech people sometimes think, yeah, it's easier, just make some app and then stuff is going to be different. But the systems behind it, they have grown for hundreds of years. And we really need translation to them in a way that their system and the doctors can actually really use them. And that's a thing about thinking it through, what is really needed, how does it work, how does it interact with each other, and also how do we create a usability for that stuff that also a doctor who's 65 can still try to navigate through the systems that they have in place. And I think that's why it takes so long, because you can't just easily decide on, like you can in a startup. I mean, if we say we want something done in this and that way, then we just do it. But if we are aware that it's not just us doing something, that we also want to have people, governments, system, infrastructure use the kind of technology, then, for example, standardization is needed, and it basically just came. So it's something relatively new, but also all the stakeholders around it who decide, and human rights and all these features that we created in democracies, they also have to understand it. And it just takes a while and probably will not take long anymore, because now we are in that phase where people are waking up everywhere that probably a lot of things that come in technology are not just dangerous, but also very less dangerous than other technologies that we currently use.
When I talked about verifiable credentials and DIDs like 6 years ago, then people were nicely listening and saying, oh, yeah, this is crazy, but probably it's not going to happen, right? And we decided to work on this thing because we were convinced that the standardization will actually, at one point in the far future, lead us to a world where identity or digital identity is represented by DIDs and verifiable credentials. And for us, it's fantastic. And I think that we saw that in the in this podcast series here, that industry, government, blockchain world, everyone is basically moving into this direction and recognizing that the standard is the future. And so this is actually, it feels very good that we apparently saw this thing very early, and that we invested a lot of time and work and money and so on into actually making this happen, not only building something, but also going to conferences, contributing to the standards, being into the inside the standardization process and stuff like that. So that was very scientific and was a lot of fun, but also a lot of work. And seeing something like that now slowly unfold in different sectors, not only in industry where I thought that it would happen, but also inside the government now, is just fantastic.
Beautiful validation. I can hear it in your voice. It's nice. It's sweet. It's nice when you're working on something for so long to hear, especially from like the government saying, hey, this is finally what we need. It's a beautiful thing. Congratulations and thanks for joining us on the past couple of episodes. Ingo, Gustav, thank you for joining us today. That's all the hot time we have today. A big thank you to our guests, Gustav Hemmelmeyer and Ingo Rube, for sharing their insights on this important and timely topic. As you guys know now, it's saving lives. It's clear that the landscape of identity verification is changing rapidly. Now it finally is. And it's going to be interesting to see how the governments and industries finally connect and adapt to these changes, as we saw with Kilt Protocol. Thank you guys for listening to the Charlie Shrem Show, and we'll see you next time.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
From a flat tire in the city to a dead battery on a distant drive, AAA is partnering with T-Mobile for Business to accelerate response times and get more drivers back on the road fast. Our nationwide connectivity powers location telematics, so AAA's fleet can find stranded drivers quickly while being fully equipped with the in-vehicle tools to have answers when they get there. This is elevating the member experience. This is AAA with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
At KPMG, we make the difference. It's not just something we say. It's what we do. Our professionals believe in the value of collaboration and the power of technology. We work closely with clients to uncover insights that illuminate opportunity, develop bold solutions that innovate industries, and create better outcomes driven by data. Brighter insights. Bolder solutions. Better outcomes. It's how our people make the difference, driving growth and value for our clients. KPMG. Make the difference.